This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Well, here we are. Now, I know this is not a personal kind of thing, but I've been asked to look for somebody. That's right. John C. Pigman has not been seen around the traps for a number of years. And one of his friends, Mick, has got some important news to give him regarding a mutual acquaintance who's very sick. So if John C. Pigman is listening, or anybody knows where he is, could you pass on this message to ring Mick? And if he doesn't know Mick's number, he can always leave a message on my phone, 0439 395 489. And don't send me a message about your lost cat or dog, okay? There is a limit. Lost human beings, I'll talk about, but lost cats or dogs, no. Now, tonight is the dinner at Naruda's in Brunswick for all you city people. That's the corner of Breeze Street, B-R-E-E-Z-E, and Albion Street in Brunswick. Starts at 6:30 p.m. Come along, pay for your own food and drinks, and meet some boring and meet some interesting and meet some fascinating people. We've got all types there, so if you think you're boring, interesting or fascinating, you're welcome. Now, next Wednesday at the Footscray Hotel at 48 Hopkins Street in Footscray, I'll be doing a presentation on the Pilbara strike, Australia's longest strike, which lasted from the 1st of May 1946 to August 1949. Fascinating strike in northwest West Australia. So come along. You're allowed to bring food, drinks at bar prices. There's no food at the pub. It's a traditional pub, just sells drinks and things in packets. So if you want to bring some cakes or whatever, or sandwiches, bring them along and we're happy to eat them. Now, the week after, that's the 26th, will be the dinner at Frankston at La Porchettas at 6:30 p.m. Now, an important day to remember to put in your calendar is Sunday, the 30th of August. On Sunday, the 30th of August, the West Parpoint office will be holding its second major event for interested people who are interested in the West Papuan independence struggle and for members of the West Papuan Rent Collective. That's on Sunday, the 30th of August. Starts at 1 p.m. It's 838 Collins Street. So keep that in your diary. I'll be hosting the auction there, trying to raise money to keep the office afloat. So come along and meet people interested in a national liberation struggle on our doorstep, which has seen over 500,000 West Papuans die in that struggle since 1967, I think, when the Indonesians took over control of West Papua. So meet the activists, check out the office, and maybe you can help them. But come along, donation for lunch, and there's lunch between 1 and 2. Then there's presentation by West Papuan speakers. Then there's the auction, and then there's coffee, and then you go home and cry. Okay, here we go. The sacred cows have wandered in. They are dancing. They're very, very nice. I'm not going to send them to the slaughterhouse. Evil minds that...
Evil minds that plot destruction. Sorcerer of death's construction.
An analysis you'll never hear anywhere else. Anarchist World This Week, Australia's sacred cow slaughterhouse. 10 a.m. every Wednesday. Listen to the Anarchist World This Week for an up-to-date analysis of local, national and international events.
Poisoning their brainwashed minds. Oh, Lord, yeah.
We'll be right back.
Welcome to the Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia, courtesy of the Community Radio Network. This program is streaming live on 3cr.org.au. The program is podcast by the very talented Henrietta. And what can I say? My name's Joseph Toscano. If you wonder what anarchism is all about, anarchos without rulers, not without rules. And obviously, when you don't have rulers, they get a little bit upset. So they say all these horrible things about anarchism. It means without rulers, not without rules. What gives rulers the ability to determine the lives of billions of people? Guess what? Inequalities in power and wealth. So the anarchist struggle is the struggle to devolve or share power, possibly through direct democratic means, and hold wealth in common and use it for the common good. If you talk about motherhood statements, that's the most important motherhood statement in the known universe and the most derided. Now, radio is about repetition. People say, why don't you pick another subject sometimes? And I say, look, what's the point of picking another subject when repetition can reinforce a message which seems to be lost amongst a lot of people? Now, I'm sure the majority of people listening to this program would agree that 1 + 1 = 2. Even I agree with that, and even Henrietta agrees with that. 1 + 1 = 2. Now, most commentators and people in Australia say that Australia has entered a period of economic and social decline. I agree with that, and I'm sure most of you agree with that, unless you're a billionaire, but that's a different story. So if 1 + 1 = 2, what has caused that economic and social decline for the majority of people living on this continent? Whether they're temporary residents, whether they're permanent residents, whether they're Australian citizens, and the list goes on and on. Well, what has happened in the last 50 years? What disease, what avian or human disease has infected not just Australia but the rest of the world? And it can be, you can sum it up in 4 words. Privatisation, corporatisation, globalisation and deregulation. If 1 + 1 = 2, privatisation, globalisation, corporatisation and deregulation have been the major drivers of this economic and social decline in this country. So we'll go through it step by step, because it's just extraordinary how few people in this country raise this issue. You can switch on any podcast, any radio program, any site on the World Wide Web, any television program in the legacy media, and you will not hear any significant discussion regarding the damage that has occurred as a result of successive governments in this country at the state, federal and local level in many instances have introduced this ideology which has caused so much harm and created so much anger and division in Australian society and most other societies around the globe. But today we'll concentrate on this country, this sovereign nation state. Historically, the state's main role was to maintain the power of those in authority. And even a few hundred years ago, we had the ludicrous situation, the 13 men who were tried for high treason in 1855 for their involvement in the Eureka Rebellion. face the draconian punishment of being hung, drawn and quartered. 4, treason against the monarch. Now, obviously, things have improved a little bit because of reformist movements, revolutionary movements, the death of hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people, trying to improve their lot. And by the 20th century, the state's role had been redefined to some extent. And the state was forced to take on a role where it looked after the interests of the majority of people in that society because of these struggles which had occurred over hundreds of years. So by the end of World War II, we had a situation where most countries, most sovereign nation states, were passing legislation to improve the lot of ordinary people. Well, I should say, not ordinary people, but extraordinary people who did the work to keep society functioning. By the 1970s, we had this new ideology called neoliberalism, which was based, as I said, on these four principles: privatisation, corporatisation, globalisation and deregulation. And neoliberalism was about turning the tide, reverting the states back to its original purpose of maintaining control for those who are in authority. So what we've seen over the last 50 years in this country is law after law, a raft of legislation, which has been passed through Parliament at the local, state and federal level, mainly the federal level and state level, that has attempted to reverse the gains of a century of struggle in terms of the state providing basic necessities for people they rule. For example, in Australia by the 1970s, we had free tertiary education. We had the introduction of a universal health system through the introduction of Medibank, which was then rechristened Medicare. We had an increase in the amount of resources going towards public education, resources going towards the public hospital system. We saw trade unions effectively demanding better wages and conditions for their members. At that stage, over 50% of Australian workers were members of trade unions, which came together in trades and labour councils in various states. So there was a momentum. Then we saw the provision of basic services through the state owning things like telecom, gas production, oil production, and the list goes on and on. So what happened with the introduction of this new ideology termed neoliberalism? It's got a nice veneer, hasn't it? Neoliberalism, the new liberalism. What happened is that over a number of years, the tables were turned. Privatisation meant that assets which had been built up through generations of workers' taxes to provide much-needed basic necessities to the population at large, like the Commonwealth Bank, which was owned by the Australian people, like Qantas, which was owned by the Australian people, were basically given away at bargain basement prices to the private sector. So when you have a weak private sector and a very strong, when you have a very weak public sector and a very strong private sector, we see competition going out the window. And we see the creation of monopolies and duopolies. This is what corporatisation is about. It's about corporations, some publicly listed, some not publicly listed. And when I talk about public listed, I'm talking about listed on the stock exchange, taking over vast sections of Australian industry and manipulating that to increase the profits for their major shareholders. That's what corporatisation is all about. All you've got to do, and I keep saying this ad nauseum, go into any major mega metropolis of consumption and you will see the same brands. And in many cases, up to 200 brands can be owned by one particular corporation. Now, we are told ad nauseum that this country, that small business is the engine room of this country. Small business is not the engine room of this country. Small business is basically being destroyed by the corporatisation of a section, various sections of society. Look at the hardware industry. Apart from two, possibly three chains, almost every independent hardware shop in this country has been incorporated into those corporations. Look at the pharmaceutical industry. Over 50 to 60% of pharmacies belong to two corporations. Look at the private health industry. Over 40% of general practices belong to four corporations, and the list goes on and on. Then we have globalisation. And with the introduction of AI, the wonderful thing is you don't have to actually send jobs overseas to poorly paid workers. You can actually do machines and do those jobs for nothing apart from the capital expenditure. So we saw a period when industries were shut down because labour was much cheaper overseas. It was non-unionised. In many regards, even in authoritarian countries where workers wouldn't dare to take strike action. And then we had the concept of, then we had deregulation step in. Deregulation is about removing regulations which have been put in place to protect people. Obviously, not all regulations are useful, but most of the regulations that have been pushed back, whether it's red tape or green tape, as they describe it, has been regulations which has improved the lives of workers and people. On top of that, during that period, the only organisation which was able to fight back has been basically outlawed. Where in this country, union membership has dropped in the last 50 years from over 55% to less than 12%, and most of that in the public sector. Introduction of individual contracts. And the fact is that we now have a situation where most people realise that the neoliberal revolution was a con. On every available statistical indicator, and maybe you don't believe in statistics, but they are useful, the rich have got richer, power has been concentrated in fewer and fewer hands, billionaires have become, you know, commonplace, 147, I think, in Australia, while the majority of Australians who do not have disposable income now find themselves with their back to the walls, being asked to carry the load as the economy downturns. We don't hear talk about legislation which, you know, which taxes the billionaires and even the millionaires. We don't hear talk about legislation about renationalising essential services in this country. We don't hear talk about increasing government expenditure in terms of not of government providing services, not outsourcing them to private corporations who maximise profits by ripping off the taxpayer. And you don't hear about significant legislation been passed in Parliament to try to redress these increasing divisions in Australian society. So what we see is the emergence of the hate mongers, the emergence of political, social, cultural groups in this country which point the finger at the other, the person who may have a different religious belief, who dresses differently, who may wear a funny hat, who speaks with an accent, who immigrated here, who may be a refugee, who may have a different sexual orientation, and may have been part of the original inhabitants on this continent that had been here for over 65,000 years. It seems that at the current moment in 2026, the main political, social, cultural game is to blame the other. Nobody, hardly anybody, talks about the fact that we find ourselves in this situation because as a nation we have accepted the four horsemen of the apocalypse. The privatisation, globalisation, corporatisation and deregulation has essential components of Australian life and the Australian economy. So we are at a tipping point. Do we see the growth of political, social and cultural movements which divide this country? Or do we see the growth of political, social and cultural movements which can add up, that know that 1 + 1 = 2, that know that the major reasons we find ourselves in this situation is because of this pathetic neoliberal revolution which was sold as the solution to every human problem. Now, obviously, it percolates. If you're under increasing stress because you're in an insecure job, you'll see increase into personal violence. And it doesn't matter how much legislation is passed, that will continue. You'll see more people turning to addictive substances in order to help resolve their issues, which will lead to more problems. You'll see more people blaming the other for the situation they find themselves in. It's just an extraordinary state of affairs that we cannot, as a people, as a country, actually point the finger at the very institutions and the very people that have allowed this to occur. Parliament, representative parliament, representative democracy, has turned out to be nothing more than a rubber stamp for the 1% that own the means of production, distribution, exchange and communication. Look at the hullabaloo we had a year ago. There are going to be increased taxes for people with more than $3 million in their superannuation fund. There's not many of them around. I think there was less than 8,000. Look at the hullabaloo we've just had when the government forced to do something, the federal government, passed legislation to curb negative gearing, to change the capital gains laws so that everybody pays the same amount of taxation, whether you make your living by investing or whether you make your living by being in the workforce, whether you're self-employed or employed by somebody else. So there are no solutions to this problem until people, and that means you and me, begin to look at the nuts and bolts of the situation we find ourselves in. We all know that 1 + 1 = 2, but we seem not to be able to grasp the fact that the economic and social and cultural decline we are seeing rapidly transform this country is directly related to this failed neoliberal revolution, which has been promoted, supported by every one of the major political parties. And it's quite interesting. The Divided Nation, the new kid on the block that's been around for 30 years, has now reached their adulthood through the support of a number of billionaires in this country, including Australia's richest person, Gina Rinehart. Because the fact is that if you have a situation where people are pointing the finger at the real reasons we find ourselves in economic and social decline, those people, that small section of society, that 1% that own the means of production, distribution, exchange and communication, will do everything possible to maintain their wealth by supporting political movements, cultural movements, social movements, which divide us. As a friend of mine who died years ago told me, Joe, it doesn't matter the colour of the foot on your neck. What matters is that you need to struggle to get that foot off your neck. And for far too long, this country has been people who are, you know, who are involved in political action, social action, cultural action, have confined themselves to identity politics. Identity politics can help minorities. But ultimately, we need major transformations in this country's economy. And the first transformation should be the fact that this country's natural resources, and we are replete with natural resources, 28 million people living on a continent, replete with natural resources, that we should be able to ensure that any profit that is made is redistributed to this country's First Nations people and the rest of us living in Australia. You listen to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia via the Community Radio Network. This program is streaming live on 3cr.org.au. You can leave messages on 0439 395 489, 0439 395 489. You can go to some YouTube channels, Public Interest Before Corporate Interests. If you're interested in radical Australian history, josephtoscano.nar. And you can go to my Facebook page, Joseph Toscano. You can send emails to info@anarchistage@yahoo.com, info@anarchistage@yahoo.com, or info@PIBCI, P-I-B-C-I, that stands for Public Interest Before Corporate Interest, .net. PIBCI.net. You can join Public Interest Before Corporate Interests online right now while you're listening to this program. Let's move on. Evil comes in many forms. I'm not talking about biblical evil. I'm not talking about the evil that occurs when individuals, you know, kill other people. This has been an issue since time immemorial. But I'm talking about the type of evil which promotes ideas which have profound negative impact on billions of people in this planet, on this planet. And I'm talking about the Murdoch Empire. Whether it's that pathetic little newspaper called The Australian, which has never made a profit in its life, but which has major influence on our political representatives, or Fox News. I'm talking about the whole Murdoch Empire and how they have been able to manipulate opinion for one reason and one reason only, to maximise profits, both to the Murdoch family and to their shareholders. If you really want to learn about evil, spend a day or two reading listening or watching the garbage which passes as informed ideas. I've noticed a little advertising campaign trying to promote The Australian as a contest of ideas. The Australian has never had a contest of ideas. It's all about ultimately protecting the fortunes of the Murdoch empire. So there's evil. Evil is around us. It's not created by God or devil. It's created by individuals and corporations and companies which will do anything to maintain their wealth and power. Anything. And the Murdoch empire has for generations manipulated debate to such an extent as to promote ideas which are totally unfit for human consumption. And it continues to peddle lies and distortions on a daily basis because it can. Now, a lot of people say to me, Jay, why do you worry about the legacy media? Well, it's interesting. The legacy media continues to set the political, social and cultural agenda for the World Wide Web. Because the World Wide Web basically takes its news from the legacy media. Now, the Murdochs have continued to fund The Australian in this country, which is the only national newspaper, for one very good reason. It's never made a profit in its 60-plus year history. But it has a major influence on the type of debate and the type of legislation which ultimately goes through Parliament. So if you talk about evil, when it comes to a hierarchy of evil, I think you'll find the Murdoch media well up that ladder. This is the Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia via the Community Radio Network. Now, there is a term which is used these days. The term is called selective outrage. You know, selective outrage. We tend to be a little bit selective about what we're outraged about. Now, is there any outrage regarding the fact that so many children live in poverty in this country? Obviously, it's mentioned. And obviously, we've got charities trying to do the best they can. We've even got one charity which is raising money to send Australian kids to public schools and public education, you know, should be fully funded, but that's a different story. Do we have any selective outrage about the fact that our resources are owned by a handful of national and transnational corporations and they basically rape this country in order to maximise profits for their major shareholders, irrespective of the human, social and environmental costs? No. But when the Prime Minister makes an inappropriate comment, the selective outrage is just extraordinary. It's as if the more trivial an issue, the greater the outrage. The more important an issue, the fact is it's not even considered to outrage people. Now, I'm outraged every day. I mean, I've been a medical practitioner now for over 50 years. I'm outraged every day when I hear stories about people having difficulty accessing care through the public sector because it's underfunded and understaffed. But is there outrage? Now, when it comes to wars, let's move offshores for a little while. How about the outrage that is occurring because of the Russian invasion of the Ukraine. Proper outrage. But where's the outrage? Where's the outrage in this country regarding the atrocities which are committed on a daily basis by the Israeli state against Palestinians in the Gaza Strip, where over 1,200 have been killed or murdered since the ceasefire came into effect in the Gaza Strip, and where in the West Bank we are seeing the 800,000 Israeli settlers who are illegally, you know, taking land on the West Bank, continuing their violent assault on Palestinians who've lived there for generations, forcing them off the lands. Where's the outrage? We hear outrage about the fact that the government has passed some legislation which may have a minimal negative impact on the housing market. But where's the outrage regarding the destruction of the public housing sector in this country, where we have seen governments at the state level wash their hands of providing shelter for their most vulnerable members? No outrage. It's not there. Are we really so stupid that we are manipulated to such an extent that we pile on to a particular issue because the Murdoch Empire or some other media hack or some influencer in the World Wide Web, you know, tells us it's important? It's just extraordinary. Extraordinary. There are so many things we can be outraged about in this country that are important. But outrage seems, since the, you know, the advent of the World Wide Web, that anonymous slander machine, it seems that outrage has now become an industry. Yep. Selective outrage. I'm outraged about the fact that, you know, I've got an ingrown toenail. It's outrageous. It's totally outrageous, isn't it? Let's move on. Now, I love the Washington buffoon. Now, the lad's an octogenarian. That means he's 80 now. He's an octogenarian. I'm sure you all watched that, what was that cage fight down at the White House for his 80th birthday party. Now, something's come out in the news cycle that even has me a little bit surprised. And I've been around a long time. I usually don't get surprised by the machinations, of the Washington buffoon. Now, look at this, right? You've got an octogenarian. He's on a plane. And the Secret Service says to the octogenarian, this is the Washington buffoon, "We think the Iranians are going to attack this plane. Okay, so we're going to whisk you off this plane and put you on another plane, which nobody knows you're on, but we will let this plane continue to fly." Now, there's only one problem. This plane is full of journalists, and I understand why you'd want to get rid of the journalists, and loyal White House staff. If it was such an emergency, if it was such a threat, why sacrifice these young lives for an octogenarian who can be replaced tomorrow by a vice president? This is just extraordinary. It's an extraordinary thing. Just extraordinary that they are willing to sacrifice White House staff. They are willing, they allowed this plane to fly on despite what they described as a credible threat. Think about it. Quite extraordinary. Quite an extraordinary situation we find ourselves in. Now, terrorism is the name of the game these days, isn't it? Terrorism. Does anybody ever talk about state terrorism? The state using terror as a mechanism of control and as a mechanism of ethnic cleansing? No, we call it war. We call it defence. We call it self-defence. Now, it's fascinating. Everybody talks about the new Ayatollah. When they speak about him, they say, well, his father was killed. Well, it's fascinating, isn't it? This, his father was murdered by the US authorities. His wife was murdered. His mother was murdered. And I think one or two of his children were murdered in that bombing campaign by the US and Israel. And they're expected, irrespective of what you think about the Iranian regime, it is a disgustingly religious authoritarian regime. The fact is, somehow, they're expected to acquiesce to this state terrorism, because that's all it was, state terrorism. When you look at the situation in the Gaza Strip, in Israel, how was it? And again, there's been no investigation carried out. There's been no commission. There has been no investigation by the Israeli parliament. How was it that on the 7th of October 2023, all those Palestinians were able to break out of the world's biggest prison, which is Gaza, and murder 1,200 Israelis and kidnap another 250 and hold them for ransom? How could that occur in Israel, which has the world's best surveillance equipment, which has security apparatus, which they sell overseas, which was able to destroy militants in southern Lebanon by infiltrating their walkie-talkies and methods of communication that had that sophistication? How could thousands of armed Palestinians break out of Gaza, the world's greatest prison, and actually murder 1,200 Israelis without Mossad, which is held up as the world's, you know, most prestigious security organisation, not even having a whiff of what was happening, despite the number of spies they had in Gaza and despite the continuous surveillance of the Gaza Strip? How was it? Were they too busy involved in occupying more land in the West Bank? Why? Where is the investigation? Why aren't the Israeli people clamouring for an investigation into what occurred? It's extraordinary. If you can pinpoint a Hamas militant having dinner with his family, bomb them, pinpoint bombing, kill them, their children, their partner, pinpoint in the middle of a building, how is it that there was such an extraordinary lapse of the Israeli security apparatus? Extraordinary. It is really extraordinary. Now, if the Russians were doing to Kiev what the Israelis have done in Gaza, the outcry would be extraordinary. We saw in Gaza the destruction of hospitals, schools, places of worship, the indiscriminate slaughter of over 70,000 Palestinians, most of them not members of Hamas, one-third children, and now the even mass starvation. It's an extraordinary state of affairs. It's all about ethnic cleansing, creating the greater Israeli state. Well, the Israelis may have won the war, but they've lost the propaganda war. Any goodwill anywhere around the world that has been extended to the Israeli state because of the Holocaust, and let's not forget, the Holocaust was not created by Palestinians. It was created by Europeans who pointed the finger at the other and who created a political climate which allowed mass murder on an industrial scale. That's the situation. So how is it we have such selective outrage? Let's move on. I'll just leave that with you. I mean, I'm still puzzled. I am so puzzled about that. Now let's move on. The environment. Avian bird flu. Now, we were the last continent on the planet Earth to have to deal with avian H5 bird flu. And it's a real issue. And it's going to cause quite extraordinary amounts of environmental destruction, not just in terms of animal, but in terms of the environment itself. Now, the good thing is, you don't have to worry. You don't have to worry. You know why? Because climate change doesn't exist. Listen to the octogenarian Washington buffoon, who's happy to sacrifice his own staff for his own survival. Climate change doesn't exist. Listen to Divided Nation and their representatives in Parliament at the state and federal level. Climate change doesn't exist. Listen to the Liberal National Party. Climate change doesn't exist. Listen to the evil empire, the Murdoch Empire. Climate change is a hoax. It's not due to the fact that we have too many industrial industrial factories which have changed the climate. It's human beings who are causing the environmental destruction. Environmental destruction isn't just about trees dying and plants dying and about animals dying. Environmental destruction means that other organisms on the planet, like viruses and bacteria, who are able to adapt to changing situations because of their rapid breeding time. I mean, human beings takes a generation, maybe 2 generations, 10 generations before there's some alteration in the DNA to adapt to a changing climate. But as far as a virus or a bacteria is concerned, it only may take a year at most. Hundreds of generations occur, thousands of generations will occur in a year. So the thing is, with environmental destruction, it's not just about the trees, it's not just about the plants, it's not just about the birds, it's not just about, you know, the animals. It's about changes that have a profound impact on us as a species. Because obviously, I know this sounds ridiculous, but we do live on planet Earth. And although Mr. Musk is trying very hard to get a few people to Mars, there's 8 billion left behind on Earth. And as we're seeing in Europe, which is going through the worst climate extremes it's seen since written human history, the fact is that the environmental damage which has been caused by climate change, which is now moving to a climate emergency, is accelerating rapidly while we have institutions and corporations on this planet who continue to fight tooth and nail, like the tobacco industry did regarding lung cancer, fight tooth and nail, denying that human beings are responsible for the changes which we see every day in the climate in this country. It sounds all dramatic, doesn't it? The thing is, what's the good news? What's the good news? Because there is good news. There's also always a silver lining to every cloud. And what's the good news? The good news is that practical experience is beginning to change the tide regarding not just the climate emergency, but regarding the fact that authoritarian institutions have no solutions to the problems we face. As I spoke about earlier in the program, privatisation, globalisation, corporatisation, deregulation were the major factors which have brought us to our knees as a people. An increasing number of people around the globe are beginning to realise that what is happening is happening because we are dominated by an economic system internationally across the globe which is based on one concept. It's not based on satisfying human needs, but it's based on the concept of creating profits irrespective of the human, social and environmental costs. So the silver lining is the chooks have come home to roost. And when they come home, they're very sick and they're dying. And the fact is, people are beginning to understand that changes need to be made, not just on a personal level. I can make all the personal changes possible that I can make as a human being. And obviously thousands of others can make those changes, and even millions can make those changes. But while we continue to have political, social, cultural systems which promote the idea that the essence of existence is the creation of profits, irrespective of the human, social, environmental costs, then we will continue on this journey to extinction. Not this generation, not next generation, but sometime in the future. So that's the silver lining. People are waking up, not just in this country, but around the world. People are waking up that the fossil fuel industry has no solutions. People are waking up that the buffoons of the world have no solutions. People are waking up that major changes need to occur, not just in Europe or the European dependencies like Australia and Canada, the United States of America and even South America, but the fact is that we are seeing more nation states take on the mantle of actually resisting these elements in society which want us, drag us backwards in order to maximise their power and wealth. Now, last but not least, I was a little bit amused. Well, I wasn't actually amused. I was pretty disappointed when I saw the Vietnamese Prime Minister and Albanese get together and sign all these pacts. Now, I'm old enough to remember that there was a ballot system where 20-year-olds, if their number came up, they were drafted, conscripted. And those that were conscripted, those who, you know, didn't have much power, could find themselves in Vietnam, fighting the communists in Vietnam. And I remember the 525 Australian soldiers who died in Vietnam, the 42,000 American soldiers, and the 3 million Vietnamese. And the generations after that were afflicted with the consequences of deforestation through the use of Agent Orange and other chemicals, and the fact of the secret war which was waged in Cambodia and Laos, where more bombs were rained on those countries than the whole of the earth during World War II. And the formation of the Khmer Rouge, one of the most murderous organisations in the 20th century, as a direct result of that massive bombing and dislocation in Cambodia. Now, remember those little maps they used to show us with Vietnam and a big yellow arrow pointing to Australia and saying the yellow hordes are coming? And I thought to myself, 50 years later, it is 50 years later, 51 years later, the Vietnamese are our closest ally. Did the government change? It's obvious it's still an authoritarian communist country. It's modified. It's communism in order to survive. So what was all that point? What was the point of dividing Australia in the 70s? Of having conscription in the 70s? Of sending people overseas? And it wasn't just the 525 people that died, Australians, but all those who returned. Many of them with post-traumatic stress disorder. Many of them who suffered and their families suffered because the silent, you know, the silent sufferers are the families, the wives and children of those soldiers who came back, who were dehumanised and brutalised by what they had to go through. And 51 years later, it's as if nothing occurred. Just extraordinary. And that's the thing about wars, isn't it? They beat the drum. They beat the nationalist drum. Currently, we've got the drum about the Chinese and what they're going to do to us. And we need nuclear submarines and we need that and we need this. And they sacrifice a generation for what? So they can resume trade in 50 years' time? You've been listening to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia by the Community Radio Network. This program is streaming live on 3cr.org.au. I'd like to thank all our overseas listeners who continue to send us emails, and it's good to hear people from around the world who listen to The Anarchist World This Week. It is podcast. It's available on many podcasts. You can actually put in Anarchist World This Week and up it'll come. Don't forget the Eureka Australia medals, which will be awarded on the 3rd of December. Nominations are now open. They will close at the end of October, early November. So if you know somebody who's made a contribution to improve the lives of people in this country, leave a message on 0439 395 489. You can always put it down on paper and you can actually post it to us. Yes, we do answer letters, to Post Office Box 20, Parkville 3052. Or you can email us at info@pibci.net. pibci.net. Thank you for listening to The Anarchist World This Week on your local community radio station, courtesy of the Community Radio Network.
Evil minds that plot destruction. Sorcerer of death's construction.
An analysis you'll never hear anywhere else. Anarchist World This Week, Australia's sacred cow slaughterhouse. 10 a.m. every Wednesday. Listen to The Anarchist World This Week for an up-to-date analysis of local, national and international events.
Poisoning their brainwashed minds. Oh, Lord, yeah.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.